Okay, everyone, welcome back to the Waterski Pro Tour podcast. My name is Matteo Luzzeri, and I'm joined today by Freddie Winter, who will help me recap the event that occurred just yesterday at the Swiss Waterski Resort, the Swiss Pro Tricks. So the first event of 13 Waterski Pro Tour events for this fourth season of the Waterski Pro Tour, and the second season of this podcast. So, Freddie, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. We were talking before, sort of laughing that I'm maybe not the person to give my input on tricks too much, but I was there at least, so I can sort of maybe talk about the human side of it.
And if memory doesn't fail me, this is the second time that you are there interviewing trick skiers at the Swiss Pro Tricks. So I imagine you have insights that I'm ready to hear, honestly. Regardless of what you say your expertise in tricks to be.
Well, I mean, I definitely I've got experience of being on a dock myself, so I can kind of, I was able to sort of relate, and you know, in some ways it was quite good fun for me with an eye on Swiss Pro Slalom in just under 2 weeks' time to kind of be there and sort of get nervous with those guys and sort of, you know, feel it out in some ways before I had to go and do it myself.
Yeah, let's talk dock for a second. So I watched the broadcast, and you were somewhat like right at the beginning of the dock, but I'm sure you were observing and listening what was going on. What differences did you notice on a pro trick dock compared to the slalom dock?
Well, if you want my honest opinion, I was talking with someone about this last night. They're a lot more sort of almost friendly to each other. They're all such good mates. That's what Matty touched upon at the end about how they're all, you know, very close. They all ski together, and I think that's really, really wonderful. You know, compared to the slalomers, we're all a bit more sort of insular and do our own thing. I would say potentially though that, you know, all the slalomers are a bit older, have had time to get sick of each other a little bit more, You know, I wonder if that'll change. I'll say I'm not gonna be too pessimistic about it, but it's definitely a different vibe. There's certainly competition, but rivalry doesn't seem to come in the same way that there is certainly on both men and women's slalom.
Okay. Yeah, I had that similar like feeling watching or having been on docks before in tricks, and I think I don't want to say that it's as friendly, bro-like as wakeboard docks, but it's a good in between, right? People are focused, but then they come to each other, give props to each other. The other thing that I was thinking, obviously, there's the coach/pinner on the dock with them, so they are stepping onto it with someone who will be in the boat, somewhat responsible for their performance.
For sure, and I mean, and that was interesting. I mean, like I saw, you know, as much as one might think that, you know, professional tricking, you're going to, you know, there's going to be one athlete to one pinner, but there was people that were in a number of times. You know, for example, I don't know, Corey Pekos was in for Kennedy Hansen, obviously for Adam, his son, you know, I feel like for a couple of others, and you know, the same, you know, Matt Reaney was hopping in and out of the booth to get in the boat for a number of people. And you know, that also speaks to kind of having a bit more of a team atmosphere where people are, you know, going to have, you train with people, you have the same coach. Whereas again, you know, I think actually that's probably an interesting point with the slalom versus tricks. That I think trickers probably have more coaches, whereas slalomers, you know, you have input from people, you know, the top level slalom skiers. You know, I just don't believe Will Asher is going down and saying, okay, you know, someone please please tell me how to water ski. He knows how to water ski. He just needs to kind of he's got his own game plan. Whereas maybe the trickers that they need a bit more external input. I could be completely wrong there, but that's my feeling just sort of watching. You know, and maybe that's just the nature of the sport. You know, there's a lot more variation, a lot more sort of technical movements. So maybe you need more of that input from outside to perfect the craft.
Yeah, I would say so. And, you know, like being a coach, I can certainly tell you that there's a lot more strategy involved with tricks in the practice stage, right? So you're thinking about different runs according to different stages of the event, different conditions, different boats, different physical forms, you know, like you show up to the lake and you don't feel particularly reactive, or, you know, and then you might make some tweaks that you've tried in practice over time that know will land you to a certain score. And it helps to make those changes with someone in the boat and on the dock with you that has been going through those with you, right? So they've been through those pains and strategies. And I saw quite a bit of that in the Swiss Pro Tricks yesterday. So let's jump right in with the guys, right? I mean, unbelievable event. There's a lot of statistics that we can pull out of this. The first one that strikes me is four guys over 12, right? Or four guys over 12,000 points. Out of those, obviously, the first one in the first round was Pato, who
with a world record.
Exactly.
quite seriously over 12.
Exactly. Like almost like closer to 13 than to 12, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, unbelievable. What were his reactions out of it? Because I remember like last year, his first round at Swiss Pro Trick was also a big round. Did he mention any of that yesterday?
Well, it was quite interesting because we were just off air. I was interviewing him, and the score came through just as we went back to the guys in the booth, and he almost didn't. You know, we like to see the emotion that he gives. You know, he's obviously one of the main guys that he finishes his run and he's very happy, throws the fist, he, you know, gives a little shout. But actually, when the score came through, he didn't sort of seem, you know, desperately excited. And I thought that was interesting. I mean, I think that was. I thought about it, and I'm like, well, maybe he's just at the point where he expects it. Like, he's that good, and he's been training that hard that he's not like, you know, he's just like, yeah, that it's gonna happen. So maybe, I'm not saying he wasn't happy. Of course he was, but it didn't seem to be like the best moment of his life. And actually, what I found interesting, which actually, to be quite honest with you, I really really liked, was he seemed to be like, yeah, I got a great score, but it's not the final yet, which seems to be like that's a real sort of slalom skier way of looking at it. Doing that, yes. You know, contrasting again, like, you know, in the last few years, we have, as a group of slalom skiers, we've moved from sort of caring about scores to really not caring about scores. It's about who wins, more or less. I mean, you know, there's a little bit of nuance there, but that's basically how it is for all the best skiers in the world in slalom. But tricking remains, because there's so many fewer tournaments. That sort of chase of huge scores remains a big part of it, because of course, you know, remember this year the trick pro season is going to finish in June, right? So right. They've got another 6 months of the year to continue. So what are they doing, right? They've almost got to allow themselves to think about, you know, to set their sights on getting these huge scores in record tournaments, which pro slalom skiing has moved away from. But I really appreciated Pato. It seems like, I don't want to speak for him, but it almost seemed like his motivation had moved more towards, I want to win everything, and scores are slightly secondary. That was my impression. I could be wrong, but if that is the case, I'm very happy, because I believe that's, you know, the sport is not going to grow. The sport tricks game, which deserves to grow, as we're going to talk about, due to, you know, just the incredible stuff happening in it, it's not going to grow from people doing big scores in small tournaments that, you know, no one's going to see. It's going to grow from having the best stuff happen on the water in front of the eyes of the world, which everyone can access, like we saw yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm 100% behind you on that. And I really hope that trick skiers will get enough opportunities to make that switch, right? To where they won't have to focus so much so much on the scores, and being able more to focus about podiums and wins and who tricks the best in the round that counts, right? Which in the case of the Swiss Pro Tricks was a two round plus final, when it's the final, right? Now Pato goes in, is leading after the first round with 12.770 compared to his 12.690. Was able to fit a wake front at the end of his hand run, 80 points more. Well, it's 80 points over the current overall the current trick record, sorry. So we leave it there. And then we have Mati, who tricked 11.870, was in second place after the first round. 11.870, which was his first, it's a score that he did many times. Obviously, we know he's the best toe tricker in the world at the moment. But it's unbelievable how the run for the 11.870 he does it so naturally, right? With those wake fives at the end of the hand run, so naturally. It was beautiful to watch that run from him as well. And then there was that battle, right, for the final. Because if I'm not mistaken, Joel was in after the end of round one. Then Pablo went 10-7-20 in second round.
Yeah, Pablo was seventh, Picos fifth, Joel sixth. And it was like, by memory, it was 10-6-10 for Pablo, 10-6-20 for Joel, so 10 points, and then 10-6-40 for Picos. So it was super close in those spots. But Picos being ahead in fifth, I think he has a bit of breathing room.
Exactly. And then Pablo goes 10-7-20. So now he is gone above that 10-6-50 score by Adam in the first round. Then Joel goes 11-6-20 in the second round. So now Adam goes in the water knowing that he has to top 10-7-20 in order to make the final, right? And unfortunately, that didn't work out for him. He fell. He was skiing unbelievable second round and then just had a mistake on ski line 5 front. But I want to say a few words about this because Adam, two-time world champion, the only other world champion in the field with Pato Font, was the oldest tricker on the dock, and the guy is 32 years old. Maybe even still 33, 32.
He's 32, and I talked to him, and we figured out the second oldest was Joel, who's 8 years younger at 24.
Isn't it unbelievable? I mean, I'm thinking in slalom, if you're 32 years old, like, you still have a lot to prove, like to show for, you know. Whereas Adam was the oldest on the dock, and obviously I'm not saying that Adam doesn't have things to show for, but it's just strange the difference in age with slalom dogs, no?
Well, and I think if you could, I mean, I could be wrong here, but I feel like if you compare that to maybe, you know, 15 years ago, you know, Alexei was probably the guy to beat, and he would have been late 20s, you know, and then you had. Everyone seemed to be that sort of like 25 and older, but now it's just got so young. And the that's probably the story for me of trick skiing at the moment, is just how you know, maybe I'm theorizing here, but maybe, you know, when people saw Anna Gay win the Worlds at 15, you know, and then Neely 2 years later win the Worlds at 15 or 16, they're almost like, well, I can do this at a young age. And so like that, it's just, you know, it's given them momentum and inspiration to work so hard, to not kind of be, oh, I'll get to that peak in my mid-20s. It's like, I want to get to my peak, you know, when I'm, before I can drive a car. It's insane. It's really
insane. And I'll be fair to you, like when Anna won the Worlds and then Neely, a lot of speculation was going around of like, yes, but that cannot happen in the men. Right, like in the men, it's just going to take longer because the runs are bigger, there's bigger tricks to be learned. And yesterday proved to the world that that's not the case, right? And
absolutely.
Especially in that second round, continuing with that story. So, you know, unfortunately, Adam falls, he knows he's out. And then you have the top four guys that are going out knowing that they're in the final, right? Trying some fun stuff, right? Starting with Jake. With that wake 7 front at the end, unfortunately out of time in the second round. But wake 7 front, I mean, he didn't develop much on your interview, but I think the last time someone did it in a tournament must have been like either Corey, like we're going back in time, right?
But it was before all the flips, really. Like it's unusual. And that's, I think, you know, I mean, not before all the flips, but the flips hadn't been developed in the way that they have been now. I mean, you know, we've got all these insane half jacks, and, you know, Joel's doing these super mobs or whatever. I think that what I think is the other cool thing is, you know, we talked about it, I'm sure, a number of years ago. I remember in Malaysia in 2019, someone said to me that all the runs are just the same. There's small variations. There's some guys that are a little bit faster and neater, but basically the runs are very, very similar. But now we're seeing innovation. Matt Reaney, I think, said it in the commentary that, you know, these younger guys, so Jake being 16, Tincho, we're going to talk about who did a very, very unusual trick on his toes. He did a toe wake five back into reverse, which is, and then held it and went back for the back to that, which is crazy. So Matt Reaney said that these guys are seeing, you know, how fast Pato is and how good he is. And they're going, well, I probably can't do it like that at this stage, but I can innovate. I can do something a little bit different. And that, I think, is just so exciting because you know, look, let's not get too political. This is not the place for it. But, you know, there's a lot of people that say that the rule book of trick skiing is holding the sport back, that it's forcing people to go the easy route, do the easy tricks, and it's disincentivizing the way that the newer, cooler, bigger tricks that we all want to see are scored at a low level, so that you're almost like you're never going to want to do them in tournament because the reward is not worth the risk.
Right.
So we are still seeing this innovation, and it, like you say, it's almost going back in time. Like these sort of, you know, these weird, let's say, Russian tricks of, you know, the strange toe tricks we haven't seen since the 90s, and then the front to front seven. It's wild. And I love it. I really love it. And it's funny that it's these young guys that haven't got a clue. They never even saw those tricks being done at the time, and they're doing them.
Yeah, exactly. And Jake also did it into a wrap, right? Because I mean, I remember Corey and Tori Baggiano used to do it out of a wrap, whereas like Jake just went into a wrap. He just did a handle pass and then he wrapped himself in the rope. Now, that was his 11th trick, and that, you know, connecting to the revolution that Pato brought into trick skiing. Normally, male trickers, they do 6 flip, 4 spins, or 4 ski lines. Pato was the first one to fit an extra trick on time, which speaks highly of his speed. Jake, I don't know how far off time that seven was, but, you know, that might bring him home thinking, okay, if I just get a little faster, then I can get that trick in. And, you know, it's pretty easy math. That would have been 12, 590. So, you know, it would have been a humongous score. So he does this seven, wake seven front. It's the last trick we see on the lake. And then Tincho goes, Martin Labra, and his very first trick in toes is this super unseen toe wake five back, which, you know, people like Joel and Erica brought back into the limelight in the last couple of years, but from the wrap of a seven. So that makes you land into a regular back. Tincho wrapped in, was out of the wake for a regular wake-o, whatever, at least I thought was a wake-o. And then sure enough, he lands into reverse back and then goes straight into a toe wake back to back. I mean, it was a group of us, a dozen of us here at the house watching. We all just lost our mind on the first trick of the toe pass.
I'm getting so excited about this. It's ridiculous. I never thought I'd be this excited about a toe trick. But isn't that sort of what the Swiss Pro Tricks is about, or what these sort of standalone trick events are about? I mean, the atmosphere on site, you know, everyone was like, "What the hell just happened?" And how cool that it's a toe trick. You never really would think that toe tricks are the ones that are going to get people. And, you know, and of course, skipping ahead, he won the skier of the day for that moment. Right?
Oh, for sure.
He blew everyone's minds, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, no, that was like those 2 minutes, like between Jake finishing his run and Martin starting his, like, I think people watching on site and online were just losing it a little bit. And so then we get into the final. Finally, star Matty Gonzalez, Pato, Jake, Martin, Matty Gonzalez, Joel, and Pablo, right? Those are the top six that made it through. Walk me through your experience of being there with the guys as they were getting ready to go on the dock for the final.
Well, it was just so cool because that, you know, that they've all, and I think they all love that format of 2 rounds plus the final, which we almost now take advantage of slalom, take for granted as slalom skiers. But they're so unused to it because if you look at all the other trick tournaments, it's cut. So it's like, you know, as we know as slalom skiers, you know, when you have that format, it sucks because you're just trying to make the cut. You're not trying to express yourself. You're not right. Given any sort of agency to really go for it. And, you know, you saw that was vocalized by a number of people, you know, especially on the women's side, Erica, I'm thinking of, and Kennedy said, yeah, I've got my score. I'm going to go bigger in this run and then build up. So they'd had that, you know, they all of those skiers, or the last four at least, Matty, Martin, Jake, and Pato, they all knew it as they finished second round that they were in the final already. So they went and kind of gave themselves a dry run, and then they were like ready for the final. And it was incredibly cool. And, you know, again, the sort of camaraderie between them was pretty special, especially as a slalom skier not being used to it on that very dock, you know, from 10 years of the Swiss Pro.
Right. And so then they go. Pablo has an early fall, doesn't really get to express himself as well as he can, because he's also someone that can trick over 11. So, you know, him first off the dock could have put a lot of pressure on the remaining guys. And then I believe it was Joel. Joel also didn't quite, I think, kind of similar score to the first round.
But interestingly, having talked to him, he tried a seven at the end, ski line seven back.
Oh yeah.
Am I right? Tried a ski line seven, and he yeah. was very close. He was very, I mean, like very, very close. I mean, you know, of course, if there's one person that can land on a ski slightly off and come back from it, that's Joel. So he reckoned that, you know, he was really close. He said he's landing it a lot in practice, but not in a run very much. He lands it a lot outside of a run, but in a run, it's touch and go. So he said he was very close to getting it. He said if he'd got it, then he'd have, you know, been able to get a few more tricks and he'd have been really in the money. But he, you know, unfortunately for him, it didn't happen today. But you know, he'll be back.
And you know, this is a good opportunity, you know, to go back and talk about like variability of runs and different skill sets of skiers, right? So we just mentioned Pablo and Joel. Joel has already tricked over 12. Pablo hasn't. Pablo does ski line seven back regularly. He did it in every round. Joel is trying to get it into his run, right? But then, of course, Joel has bigger flips and Pablo doesn't quite have the same amount of flips. So there you already see the differences in skill set, right? Which then obviously lend to different shapes of runs.
Well, I mean, and to extend that, and you know, I'm a bit basic on this, but I mean, if you look at it like if you look at, you know, Matty, you said earlier, he's the best in the world at toes, right? That he's incredibly good at toes, and his toe run is worth a huge amount compared to the rest of the guys. There's Pato, as you said, very, very fast, and Joel does huge tricks. I mean, probably if there's one guy you wanted to see do the biggest trick possible, you probably ask Joel. So yeah, like everyone's trying to, you know, butter their bread a different way, right? The skill sets they you really in trick skiing, you can really use that to your advantage, but you also need to round yourself off to protect yourself from having gaps in your resume, as it were.
Right. And then, you know, we get to, I believe, then Jake goes out and Jake does 12-230, his personal best, first time over 12,000 points for him, and I believe 12th in the history of the sport to go over 12. Then Matty goes
and a USA record.
And a USA record, open record, exactly.
Yeah.
Because if I'm not mistaken, I might be wrong on this, but I believe only Jimmy and Adam and Jimmy went over 12. Exactly. Yeah.
That was the chat around yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah. So then 12-230, huge score by a 16-year-old. And then I think Tincho goes out 11-5-10, doesn't quite get it.
Tincho was second to last, actually. It was Matty just before Tincho.
Oh, right. Sorry. So Matty goes out and does the 12-440 run, which has already he's done before. And really all that is swapping the two wake fives at the end of his hand run with two ski line fives. Now, I know it sounds like, oh, just right. But he does that and he gains roughly 550 points, something like that. So he nailed it in the final 12-440. He's leading with two skiers to go, right? So Tincho and Pato. So Tincho goes 11-5-10. And then Pato in toes falls on toe wake line five back, right? Now, can you briefly tell us what happened there? Like what happened during that toe run?
Well, you know, I don't think Pato's a guy to give excuse. I've never known him to be a guy who to ever, you know, give an excuse that, you know, to sort of to you know, unfairly. But I think he sort of mentioned that the drone was a little close. He was looking up at it. If you actually look at his reaction as soon as he falls, he turns around. I mean, this is not like it wasn't a considered thought. It was like he just turned around immediately and looked up at the sky to see where the drone was. And maybe, you know, he said in his interview right after he finished skiing, I believe, or I talked to him outside of that, and he said, oh, I just lost my focus. Like, you know, I caught my eye on something, and he was, so yeah, I mean, that was fatal to his chances. At that point, everyone was sort of clapping Matty on the back, that, you know, poor old Matty couldn't quite believe it, and he's sort of like, no, I need to see, you know, we don't know. Pato could pull out sort of a 10,000 point hand run. You know, he didn't know, which fair enough, you can't count Pato out ever. But yeah, it was, you know, and before we get on to Matty, you know, I was personally incredibly, incredibly impressed with Pato because, one, the guy's not used to losing. He's lost to a guy who's a little bit younger than him, and that would have, you know, any serious competitor, you know, like he certainly is, that would have hurt a bit. But he was so gracious, and so, you know, he's still only 21, Pato, and yeah. I mean, my God, I mean, when I was 21, I couldn't talk to people when I did badly for ages, and he did such a good job and just came across so well. So I was really impressed with him there. And you know, he's so capable. He's won, you know, I think 11 of the now 16 pro tournaments that have happened since 2019. You know, he barely loses, but also we've seen him, I think the start of last year at Moomba, he went down on a surface toe trick,
right.
or at least like he fell down in the middle of the wakes. And I think he did the same thing at Swiss Pro last year, having been top seed in both. And that, you know, that would have really hurt him. And then of course he went on to win Masters, and he went on to win, the Worlds, you know, and so, you know, we've certainly not seen the last of him, and you know he will be back, you know, very shortly.
But especially the thing that impressed me, and I wonder probably also at the lake yesterday, is the fact that despite falling on Toway Climb 5 back, which, you know, that kept him about 1,000 points shorter into his in his tour run, he still managed to trick 11-6 and put himself on the podium.
It was wild. It was wild. And you know, he looked like a man possessed. You know, he was so, you know, and I, you know, also fairly to him, I think he had nothing to lose. I mean, he had to go as big as possible. There was, and it was like, you know, he wasn't sort of, there was no nerves there of, oh, if I screw up, you know, he was trying to go as big as possible, and it was a hell of a thing to see. But you know, that'll give him confidence that he can go and do that hand run again, you know, many times and at that same speed. And off the top of my head, I'm not smart enough to figure out if that was bigger than his first run or whatever. But it just looked like he was going bigger and faster and more powerful.
Yeah, it was a little bit faster, and he was able to fit. To have a back to back in, but that's a repetition. So, no, 75-16 hands. I mean, that's what makes Pato Font, like an insane amount of points in his hand run. But so, yeah, that's the guys, yeah? So, Martin first, 16 years old, 12-4-40. Second, Jake Abelson, 16 years old, 12-2-30. And then in third, Pato Font with 11-6-10. That's the podium of the men.
And do you think that is like, just that's almost like a big, big moment in the sport where, like, you know, Pato's been so dominant, but I mean, you know, and I, of course, he certainly could be for many, many years. He's like you say, he's 21 and can, he's got tons of improving to do, of room to move into. But I mean, at the same time, like, you know, Matty, he's so young. And I think you'll know much better than me, but like Matty's a 16 year old, but he's not close to being an adult yet. Right. I mean, he doesn't look strong. He's wiry, and I'm not being negative in the slightest here. I'm just saying, like, you know, I feel like when he grows into his body a little bit and starts getting a little bit of muscles, that might help him more, and he could really be a even stronger skier.
Oh, for sure. I mean, what Matty is lacking a little bit, if I had to say, in the chase of the 13,000, is hands, obviously. But you know, the fact that he can do ski line 5 back, ski line 5 front without the strength of some of his competitors, like, I mean, even Jake, who's the same age, you can tell he's already developed, you know, some
yeah,
solid strength.
He looks strong. And Tincho too. Tincho's got those big guns on him. I mean, he's a brute.
So, no, I mean, he, you know, and then the question is he going to be able to maintain his toes as fast if he gets stronger? But I'm here waiting to see how these guys, like, keep pushing, you know. This was a phenomenal pro-man event to start the season. And I would say equally as good, the women event. Now here...
For different reasons, right? I mean, it's almost contrasting. It's so great.
Exactly. So to me, like, here the story was different. Like, in the men, like, there were surprises at every round almost, right? Whereas here, I feel that Erika, who was the defending champion of the Swiss Pro Tricks, just basically dominated every round. That was my experience watching the rounds, you know?
She was last off the lock in the first round. She got the best score in the second round. Neely went out and got 10-6-70 or 10-6-20 or something like that. And then Erika then still went out and got a higher score. And then in the final, she went and got her biggest score. She improved every round. Yeah, I mean, it is pretty insane. I mean, you know, to have these three skiers sort of almost passed it back and forward, you know. And there was a point at which, you know, when, I mean, Erika was unbeatable in between 2013 or, you know, probably 2012, 2013 to 2015. Then Anna got her a couple of times. Then Neely had her. And I remember I actually sat and had a chat with Erika, funnily enough, after the World Championships in 2021. You know, it was some party at a house, you know, 2 a.m. I'm sitting there and I'm like just talking to her about her tricks and stuff, and she'd just come third and she was obviously disappointed. But you know, she's now, you know, almost godlike. And it was actually very sweet. I thought she came across incredibly well yesterday, the way that she was just saying, well, I'm just, you know, I haven't fallen. I keep thinking I'm going to fall in a big tournament, but I haven't. And that's, you know, it's exciting. And she wasn't sort of saying, yeah, hey, look at me, I'm so bloody great. But even though she's won 6 of the last 7 professional trick tournaments, which is insane considering who she's up against.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, I think that the podium is no surprise. The order is maybe somewhat surprising, although, you know, I think one could say that Erika was the favorite, just given, as you said, the history. But do not disregard these other two girls that got second and third, because their resume speaks for itself. You know, like, I mean, Neely, obviously, if I had to say, compared to Anna in the last year or two, has been daring a bit more, has changed her runs, is trying new things, you know, to basically reach Erika. You know, that's really what's going on. And I think Erika has always been a daring tricker, right? She would put new runs, she would put big tricks, big flips, obviously for a long time now, but consistency wasn't there. So until then, Neely and Anna could bank on having their consistent run that's sort of like 10-4, 10-2-90. That was a better bet, right? And then in the last 2 or 3 years, Erika became consistent with those big runs. And all of a sudden, it begs the question of, okay, I need to do 2 front flips. I need to learn another front flip. I need to do some toe wake line fives. Like, I need to do something to get into the high 10,000s, nearing 11,000, to now be competitive, to be, you know, aspiring to win. And that storyline kind of pan itself out yesterday again, at least the way I saw it.
Again, you're more the expert on this than me, but I mean, I completely see that. Like, I completely agree listening to you, because I felt actually pretty rough for Neely there yesterday, because she, you know, she had a good score first round, very good score second round. Okay, not quite over that 11 mark, but you know, we know that she could do, but you know, maybe one of her 10, whatever she was, 10-6 or in the second round, you know, she was going for it in the final, and she just lost her balance coming into the wake on a front flip, on a sort of inverted 180 front flip, right? And I heard her dad say to her, you know, hey, don't worry about it, you just got peeled. So she lost a bunch of time there, but still came back and got, you know, a really big score. Was it 10-3-70?
10-3-70,
yeah. So you know, just that one little moment, and that's the thing. I mean, I think I said to her, you know, as a slalom skier, if you have a bad turn, at least you have the opportunity to make it up. Whereas in trick skiing, it's so close to perfection that you've got to be all the time, that you know, you land, have one bad landing, one bad takeoff, one sort of little bit of a misjudgment in the air of where your balance is, and you're in trouble. So she's skiing really well, and I think it's probably fair to say, again, not being the expert, but you know, she looks really, really good. Looks really, really balanced, and those, like you say, those sort of more daring tricks, she's got them down. She didn't quite get them put together yesterday, and you know, if she just had, it would have been so interesting to see how close that would have been between Erika and Neely.
Yeah, no, for sure. That exactly. Like what I liked about the approach of the women, and to be honest, the men in the final, we didn't really mention this aspect, is the fact that in the final they went all out, right? From Mati to Erika to Neely, like they all wanted to win this, which in tricks that brings in a higher like likelihood of making mistake. Right, like you're doing your bigger tricks, you still have to be on time. The transition between one trick and the next is very important. So the bigger the tricks, the more difficult the tricks, the harder the transition. But what I liked about the Swiss Pro trick, both on the women and the men's side, in the final, they all just went for the win. And that was really exciting to watch. It didn't quite work for Neely with that slip on the flip, But it was cool to see that skiers were pushing. Now,
just on that point, just quickly, I mean that just shows the respect they have for each other. That like they know they can't lay up at all. They can't go for a safe run. They their level of competition is that high that they have to go big. There's no point doing their sort of easier run. They got to go as big as possible because if it's do or die. They're not going for second.
Yeah, for sure. Now, fair mention to the fact that two big-time trickers in the women's field weren't there, and I'm speaking of Janina Bonneman and Natalia Kuglievan. Obviously, trickers were able to trick above 10,000 points, which might have not given the win, but obviously would have been in high contention for the podium yesterday. That was the first note. And the second one, what happened with Aaliyah?
Just quickly, and on the other side with the men's, we didn't talk about Louis Duplan Fribourg being there, recovering from surgery, and also Dorian Llewellyn. So Louis hasn't won an event yet, but he won the first round at Worlds last year, did he not?
Yeah, 12-5
in tricks, and then Dorian obviously won the World Championships in 2021. So there was a number of absences, just actually from injury. I mean, Dorian was there; he was just limping around. He's got a bit of a sore ankle. He's skiing on it, but just didn't want to go as hard as you would have to go to kind of be competitive at such an event.
Right. Yeah. No, for sure. Notable absences on both sides. Now in the final, I noticed that the tournament had to interrupt with Aaliyah. She got a re-ride and then it stopped. Could you briefly explain what happened? Because I don't know that it was clear from the webcast.
Well, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn. I mean, there was some sort of an issue with the zero-off. So where there was like a lack of communication between the zero-off and the boat, where the boat was sort of juddering. I heard from somewhere that there was an issue in practice. They changed the whole thing out, but it still sort of carried on and managed to fix it during the tournament. So there was a talk of it sort of, let's say, surging through the day a little bit. Obviously, it didn't hurt the scores too much, but then it kind of got to a point where it was unskiable or to a point where it was unfair during Aaliyah. So she skied twice and then to the third time lucky and she stood up the one where the boat was sort of going the correct speed, which would make sense. And then got an Asian record.
Exactly. That's what I wanted to say, right? Despite all this, you have to ski and then you got to ski again and then hold on, let's stop everything. We have to see what's the issue. And then you have to ski again and then you personal best new Asian record. So congratulations to her. Exactly.
Exactly. Must have been absolutely exhausted.
Yeah. So no, congrats to her and congrats to Alexia Abelson, who, if I'm not mistaken, at the very young age of 14, tricked a new PB in the second round with 8,030. And I believe that's a pending US girls 4 record. Girls 3,
She tricked a PB in the first round as well. So she really put it up by, she put her PB up by, I think, 500, 600 points. I forget exactly what it was, but yeah, it was big. And I mean, tricked over her PB 3 rounds in a row, 6,880, 8,030, 7,990. So,
right. And made the final. So, I mean, obviously, great skiing for her. Now, so we have our podium, like Erika wins back-to-back the Swiss Pro Tricks, Neely Ross in second with 10.370, and then Anna Gain third with 9.390.
She was quite sort of bemused by why her tricks were cut. There was a lot of people, the commentators, everyone sort of said the same, seemed to be saying the same thing. Like, hang on, she only got, I think, 3.490 in her toe pass. She had a toe... O or something. I mean, something fairly innocuous. She had it cut. And I think everyone was a bit surprised about it. Matt Reaney again and Kyle on the commentary was sort of saying they couldn't see what it was, and she mentioned she was surprised too. So, but I talked to her husband Sean, and he said that she's not been skiing as much as she would have liked. She's kind of been going, a little bit less, just because she had a wedding at the start of the year and all that sort of stuff. So, she didn't do Moomba, which is very unusual for her. But she's, coming into the season, and yeah, I think she'll be right, and she'll get right back up to that level that we know that she's been at for so many years.
Yeah, I have the trick sheet in front of me here from the final, and Tove Klein-Noh and Tove Klein back-to-back were cut. Now, just to put a bit of context, it's 480 times 2, so that's 960. 9390 plus 960 is 10350. Now, that wouldn't have been enough to get second spot away from Neely, but obviously that score would have been announced before the other two finalists would have taken on the water and all
Yeah,
that
pressure.
is related to that, right?
Good point.
So no, I mean, very, very exciting tournament on the women's side as well. I mean, as I said, to me, the highlights were Erika like just scoring more than everybody else every round, and Neely really showing her attempt at just pushing towards that 11,000 mark, which is what it seems to be needed now if you want to beat Erika in a final.
And I think that it's what's maybe interesting is the moment that we maybe saw yesterday, this sort of like this the start of a potentially new competitive era in trick skiing on the men's side is something that happened 8 years ago on the women's side,
Correct.
where Erica was the sort of indomitable Pato Font character, and then suddenly Anna as a 15-year-old comes along, and then a couple of years later it's Neely, and so then it just brings this incredibly intense competition, era between the three of them. And I think, between Tincho, Jake Abelson, and Matty, who won, plus the very old veteran Pato of 21, and of course Joel Poland, who's innovating more than anyone, I think that's fair to say. And unfortunately, all the tricks he's inventing, which we all would love to see, are not being given what they fairly should, I would say, in terms of point scores. We've got an incredibly exciting next number of years, 10 years in trick skiing, on both sides. Because again, Erica's 28, Anna's 24, Neely's 22. They're also still so young.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that regardless of whether there will be this long-awaited and discussed revolution in the trick scoring, whether that will happen or not, the thing that is clear, the main takeaway, is that skiers are still going to innovate and push within whichever boundaries they're given. I mean, we've seen innovations, a lot of innovation in the last 10 years or so, in tournament trick skiing. So what runs they put together, what tricks they put in the run, and the scoring hasn't changed. So, you
But
know.
I mean, at the same time, we're nerds for this, right?
Yes.
You said that we're the exact people that are going to be excited about a toe wake five back being done the opposite way. To the public, who no one's going to get that. No one's going to understand the nuance there. So yes, we're seeing very small. It's exciting for us and for the people already in the sport. But this is the trick skiing, frankly, is the most accessible event that we have. It's the one that you have to have the less equipment for. You can put it basically anywhere. This it's frankly a crime that there's only four trick tournaments this year, or five trick tournaments this year. And then slalom, where you've got to have it on a ditch in the middle of nowhere, very very narrow lake, with a perfect slalom course which is set up to a millimeter, has 14 events, whatever it is. Trick skiing should be the one that's actually going to bring people into water skiing. So I think that whoever the is going to be in charge of that revolution of the scoring, which has been promised, but I'm not confident about, needs to get a wiggle on, because when someone can see, five flips in 20 or six flips in 20 seconds, then all these ski lines are going to go, oh, it's incredible. But do they want to see, backflip, backflip, backflip 180, backflip 180, back to back, back to back? Or do they want to see, super mobs and all sorts of stuff? So I know that some of the trick skiers will disagree with this because, of course, the people that are winning the tournaments already probably don't want it to change. But I mean, let's make the sport more exciting. Let's make risk more worth it. And so the runs can be a lot more varied, and so people don't go, oh, well, there's a guy with orange hair who did one run, and then another guy with dark hair did the same run minus one trick. That shouldn't be the case. Tricking should be more exciting than it is. All the ingredients are there. It's just organized badly, in my humble opinion. It's organized badly, and it's the format sucks.
Yeah, well, as I said, I you'd be surprised in hearing that I don't have a firm opinion about it. I don't know what's best.
I'm surprised.
But as I said, what I do know is that regardless of how the rule side of things is going to evolve, trickers are going to keep pushing and innovating, because they have, like, clearly they have in the last 10 years or so. And to me, the Swiss Pro Tricks yesterday was a very strong proof that that's the case. From a wake seven front to that toe wake climb, toe wake five back landing in the reverse, to seeing, like Neely, I believe, did three front flips yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. There's a lot of innovation going on. So, or even, take something like a half jack, which is a front flip from the back position where the edge is taken on the unusual side of the back, right? That used to be so innovative, and it was when it came out. Now it's strange to see a back-to-front front flip done in the regular way, right? So,
What are you doing?
Exactly. Which I think looks awesome, and it's technically much harder than the half jack, but it now looks like a novelty, right? So, the sport continues to evolve and change. Hopefully the rules will tag along.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've got superstars coming up that are so incredibly good. Let's just hope that the rule book and the format can support a sport that will, then increase the number of tournaments that can happen, because it's more interesting, it's less boring, less samey. And then, these guys deserve to have 20 tournaments a year, and they could have them. I mean, they could be going, to downtown Orlando, to downtown Jacksonville, to to whatever, and to have a full tour where all you got to do to have a professional trick tournament is you need to have a camera in the boat, you need to have some judges, which don't even need to be there, they can be online. Okay, you can and a boat and a body of water, and it's that simple.
Yep.
This is a package that can be sold to basically anyone to have all of these incredibly wonderful competitors turning up and doing these incredible things for a good crowd of people in any situation where there's a body of water and people involved, and that I can sell the sport better than anything else, really.
Yes, absolutely. Like, from an organization standpoint, much easier to organize a jump or a slalom event. That's for sure. Speaking of slalom, next water ski pro tour stop will be again at the Swiss Pro Slalom in about 2 weeks' time. I'm assuming you're going to ski that, Freddie?
Of course, yeah. I don't know if it's my favorite event of the year, but it might well be, actually. It's always one I love going to. Everything's just set up. We just have basically the best of everything. It's an incredible lake, and the Stadabars, as we saw yesterday, just do an incredible job. So I know that's a big favorite for a lot of people around the world too, because I just get to, it's probably the best webcast of the year, being on home turf for TWBC. It's going to be very special. I'm very excited for it, and going to try and pull my level up a little bit so I can be very competitive.
good. And the listeners of the Water Ski Pro Tour podcast can expect a recap of that tournament as well, and an interview in the preparation for that tournament. Freddie, thank you so much for joining me for this recap, and have fun in a couple of weeks.
Thank you, Matteo. Catch you later on.